The opinions and recommendations in this podcast are those of the participants and not necessarily of ausleisure.com.au. This podcast covers the subject of alcohol consumption and as such is aimed at adults, although it does not contain any subject matter that would be offensive to children. ausleisure.com.au and all participants remind our listeners that alcohol should always be consumed responsibly.
It's a fine time to have a drink. Maybe with some mates for a date. Sounds good now, don't you think? Forget the world, don't worry about money. Let's be pleasure seekers, honey. And let's check the grapevine for advice. Oh, yes, indeed. A frosty beverage might be what you really need. Will it be red or white? Which way to go? It all looks good tonight. Let's check the grapevine for advice.
Okay, welcome back to Doc's Bullwin. I'm with our resident wine guru, Greg. Morning, Greg.
Good morning, Richard, and welcome to everyone and all the listeners.
Indeed. Today, we're going to be talking about global warming and the effects it has on the wine industry. Then we're going to be looking at some hot winemakers, and after that, our regular best buys. So without further ado, we'll start talking to our guru, Greg.
Thanks, sir. Rich, I thought, today we've got to look at something that's currently becoming a very big issue in the wine industry today, which is global warming. And I have previously been watching TV shows and things the last few months, and we're talking and seeing a lot of effects of global warming that are being talked about, and big companies now are talking about global warming. So it's very much a real issue that we're facing. And who's at fault, whether it's man-made or it's a natural phenomenon or whatever, it's still very much present in the world today and something that we have to do about and something that we will have to deal in the industry with within the next few years. I think last show we were talking about vintages and how the vintages are being affected, and we're seeing a lot of change within the industry today within actual climates of vineyards, and so that's what we're going to talk a little bit about today. There's something very famous that the French call terroir, which is a word that describes the actual flavour of the vineyard or the character of the vineyard. Okay. And it can actually go down to what's known as the microclimate of the vineyard. So you can get terroir within even certain rows, because France is planted variably on different bases to Australia, where Australia we have huge tracts of land and blocks of land. France, they can have just a couple of rows, and then somebody else can own the next couple of rows, and someone else will own the next couple of rows, and they can have a vineyard that's even diagonally facing each other, and you will still get different characteristics and different flavors from those wines. And this is what they describe as terroir. And it's all to do with how the vineyard is managed and the microclimate of the vineyard.
Yeah.
This affects us in Australia in the same sort of way, because we have different climates for our different areas. So we have hot climates, warm climates, and cool climates. And each climate produces a different style of wine. So where we get somewhere like Tasmania, which is a typically cool climate, where we get more intense whites and we'll see more flavours within things like sparkling wines and Chardonnays, whereas within some of the warmer climes, we get more intense reds like Barossas and things like that. So places like that will get different flavours coming through. So what we have to look at now is what is going to happen in the future if our climates start to change and our cooler climates become warmer climates and our warmer climates become hotter climates.
Yeah.
What is this going to do to our vineyards, and how is it going to affect our grapes? And are we going to see further down the track, perhaps in 10 years' time, places that were producing previously cool climate wines are now producing warm climate wines, and we're going to get different characteristics and flavours? And what is this going to do to our different industries, such as the Riverina, which is a warm climate area? Now, if that becomes hot climate and we're not producing as good a quality, then what do we end up with? Do we end up with more than just a basic cask wine? So are we going to end up with a lot of very cheap wine on the market that won't be as good a quality? And then we're really going to have to search out those smaller, hard to get vineyards, which will become literally hard to get. One of the interesting things I was reading about was a vineyard in England. That England's not particularly well known for their wines, but there are vineyards over there. And there is one vineyard over there that have been struggling for years and years to produce half a decent wine. All of a sudden now, they're producing a reasonable quality wine that people are starting to say, this is a great drink.
And all due to the climate change.
All due to climate change. Yeah. So it is very, very much a real issue nowadays. And we're not looking just on an Australian scale, but a world scale, because what happens is if England changes, France changes, and Spain and everywhere, all over the world, nationally, we're going to see, or globally, we're going to see tremendous differences in wines, and this will affect our output, our buying, and our quality at the end of the day.
It certainly is an interesting subject to talk about.
Yeah, so it's a. I remember back in 1975. Sitting in school, I'm showing my age now, but sitting in school, and we did a...
Not drinking, I hope.
No, not drinking. We were doing a project, which was, how do you see the world in the year 2000? Now, this was 25, 30 years away for us, and we all thought we were flying around in spaceships by the year 2000. Yeah. But I remember specifically writing about pollution and what was going to be our atmosphere and how would we... be living? Would we be living under the ocean, or would we be living in some man-made bubble because of our own atmospheric conditions that we created and produced?
Wow.
And it's sad to say that I think that we're slowly seeing these things actually come true, and that very much down the future track, we really have to look after what our planet has and hope that we can survive and get all this global control back again for our kids' futures.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, and particularly for the wine industry as well, because as I said, we're really looking at an industry now that the grapes are very delicate, they get affected very easily, and who's to say what's going to happen in 10 years' time and whether we're going to get good wine production. And I'd hate to think that up to 2005 was our best years ever of wine production, and then it's all gone sour after that. So let's keep our fingers crossed.
We will. So, you know, you can imagine someone at school now, you know, 12 or 13 years old, they in 10 years, 15 years, they'll be, you know, maybe a brilliant winemaker.
Yeah, exactly.
And understand that the new climate changes.
Well, yeah, maybe that's our next step. I mean, do we look at perhaps our next future venture is we go into controlled climate vineyards where they're actually we're growing grapes in tunnels, a la hydroponics and things like that. Maybe that's one step again into the future. But what does it produce as far as quality goes? And do we still get terroir? Do we get individual characters within wines that we can associate with and say, that's the flavour that I'm looking for? Or because I know now that myself, like, I love Barossa Shiraz, so am I going to be able to buy Barossa Shiraz in 10 years' time and still get Barossa Shiraz flavours, or do I have to buy that from somewhere that's been manufactured? So very, very much a real.
It's something you can sit around the dinner table and chat merrily about for a long time.
So
can I just ask you, who are the new winemakers emerging in the industry today?
Yeah, well, I think now we're also seeing a shift in the wine industry with what the old school wines that used to be around. There was a lot of wines that were controlled by big companies, and I won't mention names, but everyone knows them. And they have been around since the 80s, and everyone has always bought those wines, and they've always been fairly consistent. But we've seen a lot of change within wines and wineries today because of the big companies buying the wineries and taking them over and just literally keeping the name of the wine. But then they change winemakers, they change formulas, and the wine mightn't be as good anymore as it used to be, as it, you know, once held an icon in the industry. So I think that there's a lot more new winemakers emerging today that are coming out of the industry that are making more interesting wines, and that's certainly what we're at DOCS have been about, is trying to source out these wines and find these these different producers. And I think in previous shows I've mentioned some of the guys like Glatzer, so there's a lot of these young winemakers that are coming up and coming today that I think will be the future of the industry in the next 5 years.
And they have to be more than just winemakers. They've got to be, I suppose, chemists at heart.
Definitely, yeah. Well, I think all winemakers are, you know, chemists at the end of the day. They're, you know, they're so well trained and well schooled, and they know exactly what they're producing and how they're going to get the best flavour out of that grape and how they achieve the end result and to get the best bottle of wine at the end of the day. So we have quite a few emerging from the Barossa today. There's a little group called the Artisans of the Barossa, and they've got a very small select group that are just producing great Barossa wines. There's Teusner and Rusdens, Hobbs, all these guys. There's other wineries like Fox Gordon that we talked about with Natasha Mooney, and these are the young guys that are leading the charge into the industry. So over the next couple of months we'll have a look at some of their wines and see what they're actually producing and why they're so good and why they make such a great drop.
And they have to have the passion.
Oh, definitely, they're got the passion, and they're really producing the goods of the moment, and that's why, as I've said previously, like I've loved Glatzer and I've loved Fox Gordon, and now I'm starting to see the new hot guns like Standish and Messina, Hobbs, all these guys are just producing phenomenal wines, and these are the wines to watch out for in the up and coming years. That especially, I think next year's vintage, the 2005 again, we're going to see some of these wines will be really highly sought after.
Yeah. Now, if some of our listeners want to give you a call and have a chat about some of these wines, is that doable?
Yeah, fine. Yeah, just give us a call at the shop, and we've posted the number on the site there, and I'll be happy to chase down some of these wines for them. I'm already in the process of chasing some of these wines for myself, so you'll be sure that I'll be doing my level-headed best to get hold of all this stuff.
I'm sure that's good news to all our listeners out there. Now, moving on, Greg, to our regular section of our Best Buys. What have you got for us this episode?
Yeah, Best Buys. I thought today we might change the formula a little bit, because instead of just doing a white and a red, I thought we might just concentrate on reds today. We had a phenomena during the week, which was in the local newspaper. One of the wines that was written up was a $36 red called Bremerton Old Adam, which is made in South Australia, Langhorn Creek. And it was written up highly rated than Grange and Henske Hill of Grace by James Halliday, who's one of our local icon wine writers. He gave it 97 points along with the Grange and the Hill of Grace, but the price difference being $500 for Hill of Grace and Grange and $36 for Bremerton Old Adam. Actually, Old Adam was written up a couple of months ago within one of the wine magazines as well, and also rated higher than Grange and Hill of Grace. So it took people a little while to get onto it. We actually had some in the store. It sold out in about 5 minutes flat. We've had about 30,000 phone calls since then for everyone looking for it. And just to let everyone know, the 2004 vintage has sold out. My hot tip will be 2005 vintage will be better again, so that's the one to get hold of. So that's what I'd be booking for. But I thought today I'll just talk about a couple of the other wines that are available that I think are going to be really hot tips for the future that aren't terribly expensive. So one of the first ones that I wanted to talk about is actually the baby brother to the Bremerton Old Adam, which is called the Selkirk. And this is about $20 a bottle, and it's just phenomenally good for the money. Also had massive write-ups, five-star write-ups. It's produced by Rebecca Wilson, the same winemaker out of Langhorne Creek. And if you're looking for something mid-term cellaring for $20, can't go past it. It's still available, and it's again typical Langhorne Creek reds, which are big, dense, rich, chocolatey, sort of similar to our Barossa styles that we talked about. Very complex, very layered, and just for the money, phenomenal buy again.
Fantastic.
So, and my other hot tips are also Langhorne Creek, and these guys I thought I'd talk about because I tried one of their wines last year, and I haven't stopped raving about it since, and it was called the Kilibinbin Sand Trap 2004 Shiraz. There was about 34 cases made for the whole east coast of Australia, and I ended up picking up some myself and have stored some away. I rated it just over the top, 98 out of 100, 99 out of 100. Phenomenal wine, though I don't think many people got onto it. But if you can get onto the 2005, which I believe is just about to be released, you know, we'll be making some phone calls tomorrow, get some because it is an absolute cracker.
Kilibinbin Sand Trap.
Yeah, Kilibinbin Sand Trap. It's rare as hen's teeth. You can't even find it on their website, but that is my hot tip for all the listeners. If you want something phenomenal, it's about $38 to $40 a bottle. So again, about that same price as that Old Adam. And I think it's every inch as good, if not better. And yeah, that's my super hot tip. And that's what I'll be buying. I thought also while we were here, we would look at the other Kilibinbins that are produced whilst we were talking about second level labels.
What do you mean by second level label?
Well, where we've talked about Bremerton Old Adam, that's their prime label. Yep, so this is their $40, that's their big gun star label. And then they produce Selkirk, which is their second level label.
Okay.
Rated slightly lower, slightly cheaper price, but still a fantastic drink. Yes, and and this is similar with a lot of wineries do this. And Kilibinbin have done the same thing. They bought out this limited release Sand Trap, but they have these second release labels as well. And so this is what I call a second level, release label that's sort of generally available. And we're looking at the 2004 vintages today. So I think 2005 should be out fairly soon. And they've produced a Shiraz, a straight cab Sav, and a Shiraz Cabernet in the reds, which are all very interesting wines. They had very good spring conditions, which we've seen generally within 2004. The vintage was a bit longer due to the cool conditions through January, and they had a short but severe heat wave at the end of Feb, which caused a bit of concern, but everything survived, and overall they produced some great fruit. The wines themselves are made by one of these hot gun winemakers I was just been talking about, which is Kim Toisner, who took over one of the vineyards in the Barossa. But this is actually, as I said, Langhorne Creek, and he's gone in with another famous name, which is Ralph Binder, and together they've taken over the old Matala vineyard, which is a famous wine throughout Australia, and they've produced Kilibinbins out of this Matala vineyard. And again, just great drinking wines for the money. And the labels are sensational. They're all taken from 1950s horror movies. So they're the most unique label I've ever seen, and we'll definitely be posting those on the site as well. And if you want to try something, about $20 a bottle.
Yeah.
As I said, Shiraz, Cab Sav, and a Shiraz Cabernet, and all fantastic.
Sounds wonderful. Now moving on to some beers.
Yes,
I think you've got a couple of sensational beers you'd like to have a chat about.
Yeah, today I've just brought one in.
One beer.
One. I thought, well, just because it's a new release. But so the beer I brought in today, Richard, is Charlotte's Hefeweizen. And this is from the Snowy Mountains Mob again, we've featured before. They make great beers. This is
their latest
release. It's a top fermented unfiltered wheat beer, and they say it's got an appearance like that's reminiscent of a high country whiteout because there's so much into their skiing. It's cloudy as well because being a Hefeweizen and wheat beer, you always get that cloudy appearance through the beer. They use four malts basically to make it up. There's a wheat, pale, Munich, and they all combine to make Charlotte very full-bodied and give fruity aromas. It's a mild mix of Willamette and Cascade hops in there, and you get the tastes coming out of clove, bananas, and they come from the specialty yeast.
Wow.
And you find that the beer is very clean and crisp, and it's a very good drink. So it's actually been named after Charlotte Adams, who was a pioneering first to climb Mount Kosciuszko in 1881. And her spirit embodies the Snowy Mountains attitude of can do. So good to see them release a new beer. And if you want to try something different, then give the new Heffy a go.
Certainly will.
Yeah.
Well, Greg, it's been lovely to come in today and have a chat with you. As ever, your knowledge is magnificent, and we thank you for that.
Thanks very much, Richard.
And we'll see you again next time.
Yep, next time. I think we're going to Shandon Winery next time.
I think we are, yes. So I'm looking forward to that.
All right.
Okay, and that's about it for today. For those of you who'd like to see the pictures of the wines that Greg was talking about, go to the website. If you go to www.ausleisure.com.au/grapevine, you'll get all the information there. So once again, Greg, thank you very much.
Thanks again, Richard.
We'll see you again soon.
Bye. Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks go to Greg and everyone at Doc's Liquor. If you would like to contact Doc's directly, they have stores in Bulwyn North and Ringwood North, both in Victoria. You can call them on 03 9859 1111 or 03 9879 9200, and please be sure to tell them that Greg sent you. Docs also have a blog with all of the latest news and information. You can find that at docsliquor.bigblog.com.au. Ausleisure Grapevine is published every month, so if you like this podcast, please be sure to subscribe to the feed through iTunes and others. Full details on how to do that, as well as the topics covered in this episode, contact details, past episodes, and notes on future episodes can be found at www.ausleisure.com.au/grapevine. If you have any comments on the show or suggestions for future shows, then please send us an email to grapevine@ausleisure.com.au. We want to produce the content that you want to hear. Thanks for listening. This is Richard Maguire for ausleisure.com.au, your guide to Australian holiday and leisure activities. Until next time, see you later.
Fine time, have a drink. Maybe with some mates for a date. Sounds good now, don't you think? Forget the world, don't worry about money. Let's be pleasure seekers, honey. And let's check the grapevine for advice. Oh, yes, indeed. A frosty beverage might be what you really need. Will it be red or white? Which way to go? It all looks good tonight. Let's check the grapevine for advice.